Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Can you hear me, Paul? Hello. Oh, now I can hear myself. Okay. I thought I was losing it as I was getting older.
Just to keep you on your toes.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, this is live radio. This is what happens. You know, don't try this at home, boys and girls.
That's right.
Although they are all trying it at home now with Facebook feeds. Which, by the way, just to let everybody know that if you're listening, you can watch us live. It's going to be split screen, I think, Paul, right?
Yes.
Okay. You'll watch us live, and you'll get to actually
Facebook channels.
See the man behind the mic at the board there, Paul Roberts.
I'm going to be like Tim Allen, neighbor and Tim Allen. I'm going to keep me sort of off camera here so you can't quite see me.
What was the guy's name?
I don't remember. You only saw his face.
Okay, if you're listening to us, we can't remember the name. It's perfect for an aging show, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. We can't remember the name of the guy who you couldn't see anything but his hat and his eyes across the...
That's where I'm going to be.
Yeah, I want to say Norm, but that's Cheers. It's going back a little bit. Okay, so happy Wellness Wednesday, folks.
Is it Wellness Wednesday?
It's not Wellness Wednesday. I just made it Wellness Wednesday.
Okay.
Because actually, there's a couple things I want to talk about. And did you know that May is actually Mental Health Month?
Mine or yours?
Well, obviously, yours is more important than mine. I mean, yeah. No, I will acquiesce to my elders on that one. No, but May. I did not know this. I did not know that May actually was Mental Health Month. And
I've been mentally sick, so I didn't know.
Well, I don't think there's any cure for what you got. And then, interestingly enough, June, we have, and those who know me know that I've been involved for a little over a year with this thing called Global Wellness Day.
Yeah.
Which is a day, I believe it's always, I think, the June 10th. It's one day where... across the world, with a lot of ambassadors that we have, and I'm going to give a shout out to Belgin Aksoy that basically started this in Turkey, and we had her as a guest our first year on the air. But she set up this thing to basically have a day where you could have raised awareness on the importance of wellness and how it was a global thing. It wasn't something that was limited to people who could afford to pay high fees on things and so forth. And so Global Wellness Day is in June, and Mental Health is in May. So, Rod, why the heck are the two of those things connected? Well,
why are they connected?
I'm glad you asked me that, Paul, because in 2007, a report came out from the Global Wellness Institute, which you guys can find at globalwellnessinstitute.org, okay? And the report basically identified 8 wellness trends. Okay, now people are going, well, what about wellness, right? Like,
what's
this thing about wellness? Well, if you think about it, I think we even have more of a need for a more holistic, if you will, it's an overused word, but holistic sense of being and taking care of ourselves. Self-love. Not in the way that, you know, baby boomers probably think.
I was doing that this morning.
Yeah, I don't. What's your wife's number again? But to take care of ourselves, especially as life has gotten more hectic, I'm reminded of a book I read in the mid '90s that basically predicted sort of the insanity that comes with being online and in the internet world and that technology development, and it was called Living at the Speed of Light. Honest to God, how many of us basically feel that is exactly what we're doing on a daily basis?
I do.
Right?
Really,
living at the speed of light. Like
always behind the curve, trying to go as fast as I can.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm caught in that, you know, that in that warp speed when Star Trek would go into, you know, warp speed and they would basically just go through the tunnel of light. I feel like I'm stuck in that tunnel of light and I can't get out, right?
Yeah, right.
Right. This is the new Hotel California, stuck in the tunnel of light and you can't check out. But it's really important, I think, for us all to take a minute and actually evaluate our lives, because we, and understandably, the demands that are on our lives on a daily basis, be it personal, family, work, you know, friends, we try to balance it all out, try to get it all in, actually. I don't know that we're trying to balance it all out. I think we're just trying to get it all in, and we're being told and bombarded from every angle that that is the way to be. That you got to get it all in. You got to be involved in everything. That you got to be basically on top of everything. And now that everybody is on social media,
oh my goodness, and it's even more stuff.
Yeah, you got to echo there, Paul. So you know,
sorry.
And the thing about it is, everybody in social media, to a greater extent, puts the best face forward. Okay, so I don't get to see the meltdown of Paul running at the speed of light on social media. I get to see Paul doing more and more stuff with his grandson on social media, more and more stuff, right? So it's always the best 5x7 visual that is going out.
The Kodak moment, right?
And I mean, even Facebook will send you memories of Kodak moments, you know, or here's what we've shared, right? So it's all positive all the time. Well, you know what? Even Paul, positive all the time, gets tiring. And when you're seeing everybody around you having this sense of
this
euphoria,
fun,
this perceived life, right? Then you're even more under pressure, and you may be internally even more distressed, and your wellness is basically sort of compromised. Okay, so one of the things that I found very interesting is we don't normally think of mental health as something that doesn't happen outside of a psychiatric ward or therapists' offices, or, you know, when you have a crisis and you need that assistance, right? And many people, I think, still deal with it that way versus it is a part and regiment of being well and staying tuned up. What are you going to say, Paul?
You wake up in the morning. You worry about what you're going to eat. Maybe you exercise for your body. What do you do for your mind?
I don't think I do anything. I mean, you bring up a very important point. We have an awareness that we need to feed our body.
Right.
We have an awareness that if we don't, and a consciousness
to say, I got to think about it. I got to focus. I can't just eat anything. I got to eat well. I got to plan my meals. I got to come up with a diet.
Right. And integrated into that is then based on what I make choices to eat, then basically my level of fitness, my level of exercise, my level of sleep even, right? Even though that one suffers as well.
So what's your mental health regimen? What's your mental health diet?
Right. So in that list of 8 trends, and this is where it became fascinating to me, because this was something that I was aware of. We talk about it in terms of, you know, depression for seniors, and I think we were just starting to talk about that when we had some guests on the show. We were talking about that aspect as a reference to seniors and people that are basically homebound and on their own, and their social circles have basically shrunk, right?
Right.
So that was something I was getting my arms around. But I never really connected the dots, even though I was ambassador for global wellness, that the mental health aspect of it is equal and integrated a component of my well-being, right?
Yeah. Where you go and have a diet coach, you buy a book, you join Weight Watchers, you have a coach, you come up with some sort of diet plan. You similarly, many of us come up with an exercise plan or a coach or a gym or something we do to force us to do that. What is it that forces us to pay attention to our mental health plan? What's our mental health plan?
Well, and do we even put priority on it, right? No, I mean, it's probably the last thing we think about, because and yet it's so critical. So
other than fun, you try and build in fun, and that's my mental health. That's my relaxation. I'm going to go do something. And so many times in the weekend, more and more since I have a grandson now, the weekend feels just as frantic as the week.
Right.
It used to be weekend was where you wound down and charged up your batteries.
Right.
And yes, I love doing things with my grandson, but it's tiring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm physically exhausted because I have to lift him 50 times. He wants to be picked up. He wants to look at this. I have to run with him. I have to roll on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to. I love doing all those things.
Right.
But where is the day for me to recharge my batteries?
Well, and it's funny because you had that, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't like halfway through life you didn't have your kids early, have a grandson. This is sort of a little bit different. You didn't expect at this point in your life that you would be basically being that busy on the weekend with a grandchild, right?
No. I thought, you know, things I like to do, and people don't think of this as mental health, but I do. I have a hammock. The hammock mm-hmm. is my safe zone. I love to just go lay in the hammock and do nothing and listen to the birds or whatever, or putter around the garden, or watch a movie or something, or read a book or something.
Let me ask you, I'm going to ask you something.
Those get tossed aside because there's other priorities that have to
happen. Well, I'm going to ask you something because we'll get back to it. Let's stay with the hammock for a minute, right?
Right.
When you do that, okay, when you were able to do that.
I'll show myself hanging in the hammock.
In the hammock. So if that's cradle of the hammock?
Okay. It is kind of a cradling effect. It has that cradling
effect. I'm surprised you're not playing
it.
Cradle of Love or anything.
Okay. I'll go look for it.
All right. So when you're in the hammock.
Yeah.
Okay, when Paul is in the hammock.
I love the hammock.
Okay, do you have any bit of you that feels guilty for being in the hammock?
Oh, sure. My wife comes out, looks at me and says, 10 more minutes. Come on, we got something to do here.
Interesting.
Or I find myself saying, just a few more minutes, uh-huh. and then I got to get up and go do something.
So, again, the thing about that is part of the expectations of what, I mean, even on the weekend, when you didn't have a grandson, the hammock time was so finite mm-hmm. that you were still trying to steal the time to be in the hammock, to be in your cocoon, your escape pod,
right?
For those fleeting moments, but at least you had them. Now you don't have those because other stuff has been added to your plate, right?
When I used to, before we had this full-blown studio and I was just sort of doing this as a side project here and I was working out of my house, that's when hammock time was wonderful because I would just go out and say, all right, hell with the world for the next hour here, 30 minutes. And I would just literally, and I'd got myself, and then I'll work another, I'll work till 7 or I'll work at 8 or I'll do this or something. And I didn't have a 9-to-5 job. So work and play were interwoven, to use another hammock term.
Well, I'd rather my hammock be fabric. But
I have a rope hammock.
You're a traditionalist.
Yes.
So again, I think this is probably pretty common. A lot of people would probably tell you that that's kind of how their week is, mm-hmm. that they're running. It starts off with school. I mean, I had a friend of mine that basically posted a couple of days ago about how, you know, drop the kids to school. You know, rush to drop the kids to school, rush to go to work, rush to grab lunch, rush to do this, rush to do that. And she said, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah, because you always feel like you're behind.
Right.
You always feel like you're. When my daughter was growing up, when we were raising her, and again, we adopted her later in life for us and for her, so we didn't have those first 10 years. We adopted her when she was 10.
Correct.
Or 11. She moved in when she was 11. We purposely filled up her life and ours. That was the focus. We ran all day long because then she was in sports. So get into a sports program, oh, my goodness, you got to go to the game. You got to go to practice. You got to do this. You got all these things that fill up your lives and your weekends with that, too. And that was okay. I mean, we liked that, and she liked that. But, yes, I know how parents and families feel today. You're always behind.
Right. And I would argue that probably to a certain degree, maybe not the way that it manifests itself today, but I think to a certain degree, people would tell you in the time that they lived, that was a certain part of their life. But they still had some sort of regulated escape period, some sort of where you turned off the clock, some sort of where you disconnected.
For some people, it is.
It's a lot.
Literally like going to a bar or going to going to a beach or something. You go somewhere to get away. My wife.
Yeah, but you can't even get away at the bar, Paul, because people are on their cell phones at the bar.
Well, that's
right. I mean, you can't. You can't. I mean, we talk about the fact that this show is one where
they're on their cell phones at the beach.
Yeah, and sitting next to each other at the beach. And I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody else. I'm not trying to be sort of this highfalutin guru, you know, prescribing something that I, you know, do as I do kind of thing. I'm just saying that this is something that we just go through life in modern living where we don't stop to think about this. And so, what I found very interesting, given this is the area in which I exercise my profession, mostly in the spa industry, as a designer, and sort of experiential space concept development, is two things came out of 2017 that hit me kind of like broadside. Made perfect sense once I started reading them, but seeing them there was like whoa, where did this come from? Relevant to the spa industry. The two trends out of the aid that really struck me. One was silence.
Yes. I was going to bring that up because I'm a big believer in silence.
Okay. And, you know, silence spas. Now, as a rule of thumb, forever and ever and ever, you would always have a sign that said, please turn off your cell phones. The minute cell phones came around, people would say, please turn off your cell phones for the courtesy of other people, so forth and so on. And some places started being like, you know, no cell phones at all policy. But it's, people still had their cell phones in the bathrobes, guilty as charged. Okay, so that I could check after my massage whether I missed something in the last half an hour.
Yeah, right.
Or 45 minutes,
right? 30 minutes.
God forbid, you know, that I'm not connected for an hour. So now there are trends to things like called silent spas, mm-hmm. wellness monasteries, mm-hmm. downtime abbeys.
Oh, I love all this.
Okay,
yeah.
Imagine this: you are paying to be in a place where you can be quiet.
The one and only time I went to a spa, I went to a Burke Williams, you know, that chain.
Yeah.
And the only reason I went, because I bought a car and they gave me a free massage. That was the only time I've actually gone to a spa to get a massage and whatnot. And they have a room in there, I don't know if they still do, that was the silent room. Mm-hmm. And it was like heavily padded and it was very small and a big plush chair. And you went there because there was no sound whatsoever. And I thought, how strange, but how wonderful. I have been a big believe proponent. I'll tell you what I used to do with my daughter. I think you Gen Xers and the millennials are speeding this up even more. The ADD generation, mm-hmm. you know, everything has to be quick and fast.
Which is not really an attention deficit. It's almost like it's called attention deficit disorder, but it's really attention to one thing. Your attention is on a lot of things,
right?
And so that's a lack of focusing. It's a hardness of hard to focus on things.
So, for example,
for extended period of time,
my daughter Vanessa was still living at home. I'd go up in a room, and she had some kind of music on. Mm-hmm. And the TV, mm-hmm. but she wasn't watching or paying attention either. She was really on the texting, mm-hmm. right? So she was doing this constant bombardment of stimuli. Mm-hmm. Has to be lots of stimulus around me here. Mm-hmm. So I would periodically drag her out in the backyard, and I'd say, now just sit down. What, Dad? I said, close your eyes. Dad, come on, close your eyes.
That's what you hippies used to do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I'd say, close your eyes, and I say, what do you hear? Nothing. Mm-hmm. I said, exactly. I said, really? Is it really nothing now? Don't you hear that bird over there? Well, yeah, I guess I do now, which you pointed out. And don't you hear the wind? Oh, okay, I guess I hadn't noticed it before, but yeah, there is a little wind sound or something. I said, that's what you listen for. It's to decompress, to connect with what's really around you and not this blaring, screaming stimuli that you're pumping into artificially into the space here.
Right.
I find that's hammock time, and I will. And my wife says, "Oh my God, you go out and you sleep." I said, "I'm not asleep. Mm-hmm. I just close my eyes, mm-hmm. so I can shut down one."
It's your form of meditation, really.
It really is.
Yep.
And
now, had you done that before, Paul? Given that you are of that generation that stereotypically would have meditated and sought out an ashram and, you know, higher consciousness.
I've looked for different things like that. I've always wondered what it would be like to go to one of these silent retreats that Catholics do, where it's a structured program where you spend most of your time in silent meditation. And then periodically they let you eat and talk and do a few other things and talk about what you're thinking about.
And drink if it's an Irish Catholic.
If it's an Irish, if the Christian brothers. I've always wondered what that would be like. I've always wondered what it would be like to go on a trip by yourself. I've never done this. I thought it would be kind of scary, actually, to go out in the middle of the woods or in a jungle and just, you know, park your body there, and so far away from everything, you are alone. You are just there, you and nature. The John Muir experience.
It scares you, right?
It scares me, yeah.
But you know what's interesting about that, right? You're actually describing exactly the duality that we are facing today, mm-hmm. which is the need for silence and the need for retuning your mental well-being, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, whether it be meditation, whether it be silence, whether it be chanting, whatever it is that you know, whatever that personal wellness regimen that works for you. But at the same time, there's a fear of being alone.
Yes, yes. For example.
So you want to be alone, but you're afraid of being alone.
Yes.
And it both exists in the same time.
Yes.
And you're not getting enough. And you're not getting enough of both.
Isn't that strange? One and only time I got out of my comfort zone and took a trip with a buddy of mine down to the jungles of Belize mm-hmm. in Central America, up in Guatemala and all this stuff. And first we went to the resorty kind of thing, and we stayed on an island and, you know, swam and fished and stuff and get kind of bored doing that for a couple of days. And so I said, what else you got around here? And he said, well, you can go up into the jungle, you know, and there's a lodge way, way, way up there, and there's nothing to do up there. There's nobody up there. You just go up in this jungle, and what do? You walk around, and maybe you take a canoe or something. I said, let's do it. So we rented a Jeep, and we drove on this dirt frickin' road up in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, this is nuts, because nobody even knows we're up here. We have a flat tire.
What if something happens?
What if, yeah, nobody knows I'm up here.
You fall off the side of the mountain.
Yeah, right. A million things could happen. Nobody would know I'm up here. Right. I just grabbed a Jeep and my buddy, and we drove up.
Yep.
So we got way, way, way up. We were up by the Guatemala border, and, you know, no roads, no electricity, no nothing, no cell. This is before cell phones. This is back in the 80s, so we didn't really have cell phones. And it was very frightening at first. And then when you gave into it, said, okay, I'm all right. I'm not dead. I'm not in trouble here. And we stayed at this lodge with this really cool couple that owned this place, and they just kind of left you alone. Then we checked in, and then they said, have fun. You know, here's a couple of places you can go walk or do this, and you rent a canoe, take a canoe and go down the thing. And we tried a couple of walls.
So how did you feel?
I'll just tell you the experience. We couldn't find the place, so it's getting darker and darker. Now I'm getting mad, and I'm getting scared, and I'm getting frustrated. It's literally 11 o'clock at night, and because there's no roads. We're just on dirt things. You go down 3 miles, and then you turn left at the tree, and then you go down another 4 miles, and you turn left after you pass the creek. You know, it's those kind of directions. And it's totally dark. We're totally lost, and I'm getting totally scared, totally frustrated, and all of a sudden, around a bend, there it is. Ta-da!
Okay.
And as we pull up, we stop and look out, and the jungle lights up with like a million fireflies. And it was just like this bizarre, like, ta-da, you know. I went from complete anger, frustration, fear to complete awe, childlike, oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And the guy, and then we banged on the bell or something and rang some gong, and he came out and said, oh, we thought we'd given you up for loss. And, yeah, here's your room and everything, and we'll talk to you in the morning. And there's no electricity. There's no running water. Have fun. You're just in a little thatch hut in the back here. And that's when the jungle lit up. And so I spent about a week up there doing that. It was the most spiritual thing I've ever done in my life. I never felt more connected to the world and to nature and to God and everybody around. And it was just so cool and so bizarre. And the flip side of that is when my friend and I, Mark, came back.
Yeah.
So we decided to, you know, we were there, and then we drove down off the mountain, out of the jungle, back to the city, which was still pretty rustic, this little dirt place in Belize there, got on an airplane, landed in Houston, and I think it was about from the moment we left to the moment, like 6 or 8 hours later, we're sitting at a Denny's eating food in Houston. And I thought, wait a minute, 6 hours ago, I was up in the jungle,
mm-hmm.
and there was nothing, nobody. And I thought, and it really was very hard, and then I had to go to work the next day, and it was very, I called in sick, it was very hard to reconnect with the rush. Until you get away from the rush, you don't know how frantic our lives are.
So you needed to get on a plane.
Yeah.
And you needed to go to
rent a car.
To a remote location.
Then rent a car.
To find that.
And drive up literally 3-4 hours. It was about 4 hours.
How much time do you think, all in all, it took you to do that, to have that experience from when
how
you
much
left?
Money?
From, no, well, yeah. No. Okay, but I mean, cost is going to be right. But let's just leave cost out of it for a minute. Just time.
Yeah.
Which is the finite of most finite commodities.
I had to fly there, which was 4 hours or something, and then I had to rent a car and drive for 4 hours. And then it took a day or two to sort of decompress. And once we got into it, it was hard to come back out.
So would you say like a week, basically?
Oh, yeah. We were up there for a week.
Like a week. Okay. So you haven't done that since, have you?
No, that was 1986.
Have you been able to find a week somewhere to maybe even contemplate doing that?
Oh, no.
Right. So this is my point.
No.
As much as that is...
That's because I wasn't married and I was still single and we were going to grow up with a bunch of buddies, three or four or five of us. Everybody fell out except this one guy.
And when you came back, you immediately got married, right?
Not too long after, yeah, actually. I actually kind of connected. This was kind of like that last trip before you go do something
now,
like that.
Now, had you known your wife before the trip?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I just met her, and actually, we didn't get married right away. We lived together.
Are you selling me a Silence in the Jungle trip, or was this a bachelor party?
Well, sort of both. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we didn't come back and get married. We moved in together, so there wasn't.
But so this was kind of also kind of your last kind of like guy thing.
Yeah.
And you chose to do this. That's kind of interesting.
I came up with this off the, you know, I was looking in the LA Times for something crazy to do, and they had a little tiny ad said, go to the jungle and go up into Belize. I never even heard of Belize. I said, that's where we're going.
You figured if you could survive the jungle in Belize, then marriage would be okay.
I guess. And I had three or four buddies. Yeah, let's go. This would be crazy. This would be a wild road trip. And every one by one, they all said, no, I can't do it. Or, I can't take the time. And one guy said, finally said, I'll go. And first we went to an island. And that was cool, but that was still just felt like a little version of a resort. I mean, it was a small island with small little, you know, thatched hut hotels type of thing, but it was still like a resort.
Right.
It wasn't until we flew back into the mainland on this little two-seater plane, rented a Jeep, and literally took a map and drove up into what felt like the edge of the universe for us there.
So here's the thing. The need and demand for that experience and its direct impact on your health and well-being hasn't gone away.
No.
But you don't have the time to allocate a week to do this.
Interestingly enough, I had to go with somebody. If he had fallen out,
you would have not gone. Right. And that's a very interesting, I think, human dynamic. That, like I said, at the same time that you want to be alone and silent, is the same time you need somebody there with you. I think that's very, very human, very natural. I think there's a social aspect to us that we like sharing experiences with somebody.
Well, and somehow it was a safety factor, right? It was a safety factor.
Because
you're going to
an unknown place, and you know, somehow it would be safer.
If I got sick or broke a leg or something.
So this new focus on silence at wellness destinations and spas is coming through loud and clear. And it's really got to do with this increased, ratcheting up of digital noise, if you will, and everything that's around us, and everything is digital. I mean, the Mandarin Oriental, I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Jeremy McCarthy, that is the spa director for Mandarin Oriental, and they have silence as a treatment. Now, the craziest thing about that. Not that
silence as if you go pay somebody to force you to be silent.
To have access to that silent area. Like basically places are building, okay,
soundproof kind of rooms,
Like retreats that have, you know, isolation.
Yeah.
That you might be like, for example, visualize an indoor pool that has low lighting. Mm-hmm. And within that pool there's a pavilion that has also interior smaller pavilion. Mm-hmm. And so there's sort of there's two skins. There's a space between the two skins, right? So you could step in and you could get deeper and deeper into that isolation from sound and surrounding, mm-hmm. right? And that basically that you pay to have access to that because it is such a rare commodity mm-hmm. and shrinking commodity in the world around us.
Let me give you two other thoughts on the same thing. Isolation tanks. Where you float.
I was going to say, there's a gentleman that is down, Glenn, down in I think it's Del Mar, and he has a place called Float.
Get him on. I would love to try that.
I'll have to take it down there.
And enticed by that my whole life. Because they say when you shut down all the senses and you are floating, once you get used to that bizarre sensation, because they cover your eyes, you don't just stare at the tank. You plug your ears or you put music. I wouldn't want music. I just no sound. And you sit there in total silence and shut down all your senses except feeling. And like you're in the
womb. I did it for the first time. And we're not talking about altered states for anybody that's basically remembers that movie.
Yeah,
was it William Hurt?
It was William Hurt.
William Hurt in that movie. It was pretty trippy movie.
Yeah.
He basically regresses back to where he's now traveling back in time to where he, or he comes back or he gets in connection with his more primal or whatever. But yeah. He basically is this becomes like this sort of Neanderthal man that comes out of this.
And that's the fear. There are people that say you actually kind of hallucinate. I don't know if that's a
I tried it. And let me just give you a little kind of example. It was a imagine a big, large shower.
Right.
That shower room, okay? So the whole thing was waterproof. And then within that shower room, there was another room that was like a capsule. And wow. When I say capsule, it wasn't like a bed capsule. Mm-hmm. It was actually a room. And in that, you opened the door, you walked in, and you were walking into a water. And the water, I would say, was probably about maybe 10 inches or 12 inches or something like that. It was not a lot of water, mm-hmm. but it was very high in saline.
Yes, so you float.
And so you float. And there is an LED light on the water. You close the door. It's almost like a submarine door. It's like a solid door, mm-hmm. isolation door. And you float. And it's phenomenal. I would have never believed that I would fall asleep sleeping in water and not panic.
Yeah, right.
Right,
exactly.
And that's exactly what happened. And
immediately you're saying this, I'm thinking of panic. I'm going to drown. I'm going to something weird's going to happen in there, and I'm going to want to get out. I'm going to get claustrophobic.
You see, Paul, it's kind of if I remind people of the first time they were actually brought into the pool, whether it was somebody who basically gingerly walked them into the pool and taught them how to float, or some older sibling or something that shoved them into the deep end of the pool and
more what I went
sleep.
Through. It was kind of frightening. Yeah.
Right. So I think that it's natural to feel that fear. But I'll tell you, like, isolation tanks is a perfect example. Now, I don't have to go to Belize to do an isolation tank. I can go down the street and get into an isolation tank, and for that 1 hour or 50 minutes or whatever I can afford and allow, whatever I give myself permission to have to give to myself, okay, that time I can separate, I can disconnect, I can get that. And it's not just a luxury, I think, it's a necessity these days.
Yeah.
Then you need to do that. It's almost, imagine if you were a car engine that was constantly running.
At high speed. Right.
Okay? If you did not basically take the time
let
to properly to warm it up, to get it to where it's running at high speed.
Let it idle
is probably something that most people are not going to even know. Like it's like me saying chalk, using the chalk
to start idle. The car. They just turn
right.
it and go.
Right. Can you use your clutch and your gas to kind of just keep yourself
you used to sort of idle the car like you're at the stop sign or something.
So before this turns into an automotive show, that is exactly what you need to do. If your brain, your body. You know, we have accepted the fact that your body is a temple and your body is a machine and you have to be careful what you put in and all this stuff. But we don't think about that in terms of our brain.
No.
And we've talked about this in terms of just the food that we eat and how it has impact on our brain in terms of plaque potential, plaque build out, and how that increases my possibility for maybe Alzheimer's or something.
Yes. Some mental diseases. And in fact, when Jim Mackley was on from Alzheimer's years ago, he said one of the things you can do to fight Alzheimer's if you have a tendency towards it is not just eat certain things. Certain foods have a tendency to fight it, like cinnamon for some reason, I remember. But keep your mind more active and mental. The more stimulated your mind, the less likely it'll deteriorate.
And we all know.
Makes so much sense,
right, but we're talking about appropriate stimulation, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, but like do puzzles in your head, challenging stuff that, you know,
analogies. What I'm trying to talk to you about here is that, yes, but we also need to acknowledge that the quiet time. So if you're doing too much quiet time, it's not good for you. If you're doing too much constantly on time, it's not good for you. And chances are it's affecting you not only in terms of your own internal makeup, your brain, your body, your fatigue, your lack of sleep, all this stuff, but it's probably also affecting your relationships and the people around you.
Yeah.
Right? And if everybody's doing this, you can imagine how it's affecting everybody. And at the same time that somehow supposedly makes it acceptable and the norm, mm-hmm. it's not, because your body was never built to do that. You are not a metal machine that is constantly going until you have a part breakdown.
Especially guys, so that's what you're taught to be, to go get up at 4. I know so many guys now that get up at 4 in the morning so they can pack in another 2 hours of doing their emails or writing stuff or working out or whatever. And I'm like, they've just extended their day to pack
but,
more.
But isn't it interesting that it's not that 2 extra hours so I could actually basically slowly get into the day, have time with my wife or children before
read
they
the
leave.
Newspaper
or read the newspaper, yeah. sip a cup of coffee slower instead of gulping it.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting that somehow we don't put value on that?
We do not, and you hit the nail on the head, and I have been preaching this for years, and it's one of the things that people have said, oh, that's why you're not a multimillionaire, because you put too much time into, you like going for a walk, you like just being silent. When I'm home, I'll give you another perfect example, and I see this with a lot of my friends, other couples that we know. When I'm home, I turn everything off. I don't have the TV on as I walk from room to room. I don't have the radio on as I walk from room. My wife's the complete opposite. The minute she comes home, it all has to come on and stay on. So the TVs are on in multiple rooms. There's music. There has to be sound. She can't, drives her crazy if it's just quiet. The minute she walks out the door, I turn everything off. And partly because of what I do for a living, I'm talking, I'm listening all the time. When I get home, I don't need more noise. I need
more
silence.
Quiet, yeah. And I think, you know, we talk about this, and we talk about that this doesn't really get the kind of the importance that it deserves. And look around you and see, we probably all know people that have deteriorated, mm-hmm. that we have seen deteriorate over the course of a lifetime. People that we either went to high school with, people that we know from our neighborhoods, and that basically, you know, you looked at them with awe about how dynamic and ongoing and engaged and involved and running all the time they were. And yet they seem maybe feeble, tired. They didn't really take the necessary precautions to prepare their body, their mind, to sustain that kind of demand, constant demand on them, right?
My late friend John, who I adored and was my lifelong buddy, we went to junior high together. He's one of those bonded little group of guys that I have still stayed in touch with, and really cool guy, really great guy. But he was type A, always on, always going, zoom, zoom, zoom. A couple times years ago, I had a sales job for a while. I was a sales rep. And so we'd go on the road together and share expenses and just to share the driving and stuff as we'd drive up in Northern California. And I'd say, hey, look at that's really cool. Let's stop and look at that bridge over there. No, we got to make it by 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I was always trying to get him to stop and slow down and smell the roses. Never would do it. Then we'd get to dinner and he'd say, we got to drive another 4 hours so we can position ourselves to be up and ready. I said, man, I'm done. I'm pulling over. I'm having a cocktail. I'm having something nice to eat. I'm going to go sit in the hot tub at the pool. And he's like, no, that's a waste. Come on. We got to go, go, go. He was always driving like that. What happened? He drove himself to death. He had heart attacks and a couple of them and died at the same age I am a year ago, 6 months ago. And watching him in those last 6 months where, you know, his heart was so weak and he was so weak and wanted to get up back on the horse again. Mm-hmm. It's like watching a horse that's been injured, if you've ever seen that horrible thing, and they keep trying to get up and trying to, like, just stay down, stay down. He was like that. He kept trying to get up until he finally died. And I can't prove it, but that lifestyle that he adored, because, and then when we'd get off the road and I'd go home and unwind and do nothing, he wanted to have a party of, he'd have 20 people.
Well, because,
wait for him
at home. Because Paul, he was addicted to that rush.
Addicted to it.
I mean, it's the same when they talk about evidence and behavior patterns of people that are constantly online and on the internet and wired and constantly checking their stuff, that immediate need for endorphin, it's an addiction, and you literally you are a user. You are a user.
A couple times I offered him, we have this house we inherited, it's kind of out in the desert, and that's what it's good for. It's a decompression house. There's really nothing to do out there except sit by the pool and bake in the sun, and there's not a lot of people around, and it's really just that to relax and unwind. And he used to go out there with me sometimes, and it was hard to get him to let go. And a couple of them said, why don't you and your wife take this for a week? And he said, what would we do? I said, you just...
Myself and my wife for a week in a room with no agenda.
With nothing to do.
No goals to achieve, you know, things to build.
When I go out there, I have a TV, but I don't turn the TV on. I don't turn the radio on. I just chill.
But you understand that sort of quirky term of recharge.
Yeah,
your batteries, right? Yeah, I
don't want to talk to anybody when I'm out there. So, I don't want to see anybody. I just want to go and be with me.
So the issue with mental wellness, okay, is so huge, right, that the World Health Organization forecasted that by 2030, the largest health risk on Earth will be depression, not obesity.
Wow.
Okay, leading into integrative medical experts, okay, have basically been working out of the normal place where you would go get that kind of help, all right, or call it early diagnosis of depression. I mean, we do early diagnosis for Alzheimer's. We do screening and testing for cancer, but we don't do things for like depression, mm-hmm. right? Until it's done. Now we've got to basically take care of it. And I think there's been a change overall in the way we deal with medicine and wellness, right, and well-being. But the fascinating thing is that mental wellness, being that it is predicted to be the biggest future problem, okay, it's also an opportunity for places like wellness centers and spas and so forth, because those
lemons into lemonade.
Well, those hotels, those destinations, they're actually bringing in neuroscientists and psychotherapists to meditation becoming seriously mainstream. Okay,
and we got to get away from that term meditation, because that to me.
What would you call it?
Silence. That silence is a positive word to me. Meditation means forced. It means regimen.
Well,
but now you see,
you're sharing your own sort of honed in baby boomer expertise, because meditation could be what you refer to as guided.
Yeah.
Right. It could be actualization, creative actualization or visualization. Mm-hmm. There's different forms of what we could refer to as meditation.
See yourself.
So silence is a form of meditation. It's just that it's one where you basically, it's almost like that vow of silence,
monks, right? I'm fascinated with that world. It's a shrinking world of what do they call them? There's a name for it. I can't think of it off the top of my head, where they go in and they take a vow of silence forever. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. I don't know that I would last.
Oh, I don't.
Right?
Me?
So again, people go, well, you guys are an aging show, you're a boomer show. Why are we talking about this? Well, I'll tell you, we've touched on it before in other shows, where it's basically the factor of depression. Right, the factor of isolation, the fact that in many cases you have seniors that are basically either have had their social support network die off, or they've moved physically. Imagine being physically removed from the house and neighborhood that you were in for whatever multitude of reasons, and basically placed in a location, and heaven forbid that you should have that happen to you before you are in an incapacitated mindset where you can even where you realize what's happening to you. Right? But mental disorders are skyrocketing globally.
I can see, because of all these issues. I had my major episode of depression many years ago, must be 20 years ago or something, and I was really incapacitated, kind of went on for a year, and I had to go to therapy, and I had to take some drugs like Paxil to kind of loosen me up, get me a little more resilient, as they'd say, and then kind of get to some of these core issues and take a look at it. And that's when the first time the therapist said, why don't you try a massage?
Mm-hmm.
And I resist. I said, oh, my God.
Well, we know your history with massages.
And I did the one. Actually, I've done two then. I forgot about that one. I did one. I took a massage then, and then I got this free one when I got a car years and years later.
So you told me you had not had a massage in order for me to bring a massage therapist into this.
Had two.
Now it turns out you're a serial massage taker.
I had two. Yeah, I had two. And the massage person, I'd forgotten this till we started talking about it. They said, oh, my goodness, relax.
Mm-hmm.
And I was tense. And the person said, I don't think you know what it's like to feel relaxed. I said, what do you mean? You're always tense. You're always ready to jump up. You're always in fight or flight mode. You're always ready for action. You don't know what it's like. I said, well, no, then I'm asleep. It's either I'm on or I'm off, and I'm not conscious when I'm asleep.
But let me read you this, okay? Social media, which they refer to in this report from the Global Wellness Institute, they say social media, which is keeping us alone together.
Wow, that's a clever
okay?
Yeah.
Takes its terrible toll. Consider the new national health study revealing that more than one in four young women aged 16 to 24, the ultimate selfie generation, okay, now have a mental health condition like depression and anxiety. And from fake news to our social media bubbles to every idea of an agreed-upon reality is fast disappearing, no wonder the Oxford English Dictionary named post-truth the 2016 word of the year, or that the Danish well-being concept of hygge, I think it's H-Y-G-G-E, burying oneself into cozy, nest-like environments, was runner-up. Hmm. People feel crazier, sadder, and angrier.
And lonelier.
And need relief. Okay? 50% from 1990 till today, Paul, okay, people suffering from depression and anxiety increased roughly 50% to over 600 million people.
I'll give you another. That's interesting you say that.
That's a lot of angry, depressed of people out there.
When I had a bar.
Walking around.
When I was in the bar business in the 90s, Kelly McHugh's, an Irish pub, we had a couple of them, and there was one in Mission Viejo. It was around for about 10 years, up to all the 90s, I had these places. And one of the things that shocked us, because we tried to make it a little for an older crowd, so it wasn't the hip young bar where we're having bands and stuff. It's like the next way when you're in your 30s to 40s. We thought it was like 30s to 40s that would come to this thing. When you're looking for a little slower experience, you're not going to pound down drinks. You're going to appreciate fine liqueurs and single malt whiskeys and craft beers, and you're not just going there to get drunk and get lucky. Yeah. I was going to say something else. Get lucky. We thought there was a need for that kind of Cheers-like bar, and it was, and it was phenomenally successful. But what shocked us were the number of 50, 60, 70-year-olds that would come into the bar, not at all what we thought it would be about. And why? Because they're alone, because they're divorced, because mm-hmm. somebody died, or they work at home, and they don't see anybody all day long.
So let me bring this around, because I know we could probably go about 10 minutes or so. Let me bring this around, because I want to bring this around to us here in Orange County.
Right.
Okay? We talk about Orange County being the
sun and fun. Outdoors.
But Orange County, basically, we've realized that while we weren't paying attention, has become a naturally occurring retirement community all across the coast.
It's one big leisure
world. All these people that are basically, you know, bought their houses in the 70s and 80s, that have probably paid off their houses. Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit
about
that wellness factor and how the policies that we do, the things that we support, okay, we need to wake up because we are still stuck into this mindset that all things are doable, all things are possible. We're going to build to the nth degree everywhere. We're going to run friggin' roads through everything, right? Don't get me started on the toll road, by the TCA to run the toll road. You know, we're not really considering it, but we have three friggin' roads shown on a map. But it's not really on the table. Well, if it's not on the table, get it off the map.
We're coming, baby. We're going right through San Clemente.
Right through San Clemente. Okay, so there's a community that is basically multi-generational, that has a lot of people in it that are affluent, that bought their homes in the 70s and 80s, whose homes are now probably regardless of your age, you are always told that your home is your primary asset.
Yes.
Okay? And that you basically do everything you can in your power to increase the value of your primary asset.
It's my primary asset.
Right?
You take that away and I'm broke.
Right.
That's where all my money is.
So imagine this, right? You're sitting on in your home in an environment that is somehow shielded because of the natural topography of Camp Pendleton on one side and Ocean on the other, sort of the hills on the backside,
right,
and the turn of, you know, Dana Point Harbor kind of on one side. It's an oasis where you can maintain some sort of balance in your life, where you can continue to get older in your home that you've paid for, that appreciating in value, that what you know instinctively at some point may be the only thing that sustains you through your ailing part of your aging years, right? And all of a sudden, somebody's saying, no, we need to get more people into that area. We need to get more activity happening. We need to get more stuff going on and disrupt this whole thing that is your wellness and well-being.
Started with those crazy outlet malls.
Well, but Paul, here's the thing that I'm talking about. When we've talked about this before, there's financial realities. You got communities that are getting older,
right,
that basically are retiring, There is no payroll income coming into those communities the way it used to be. People, as they get older, and especially people, regardless of age, actually, their shopping habits and how they buy is not from physical retail locations. They buy off their friggin' phones, right? And seniors that have a household
full of stuff. So retail sales are going down.
So there's no retail.
Taxes are going down because they're not selling their houses. They're still taxing them at 1970s rate instead of a 2000.
Well, it's been increased, adjusted, but it's adjusted not through sales. It's adjusted by county assessors.
Under Prop 13, there's a limitation.
And so here we are in situations where now we're still looking at economic development and economic stuff in terms of construction and building and congestion and density and all this stuff. But what you're also risking is that person's nest egg. You're going to take that road and you're going to run it through a neighborhood where their value of properties are depreciated.
Right.
You're going to buy it at pennies on the dollar and you're going to do an eminent domain situation. And what I'm saying is this conversation, this well-being, this thing that we all want, okay, we need to get our heads out of our proverbial backsides and start looking at it in terms of a sustainable model, because our population centers cannot continue to be impacted by this increasing ratcheted up speed at which we do stuff.
But see,
there will be a cost to pay.
We're searching for a new model. In my father's generation, it's what he lived. Once you reach that point where you want to slow down, where you earn less and you want to slow down and smell the roses, or you can't be as active as you want, and you need more security around you and hospitals and everything, we built communities out in the middle of nowhere for those people to go and live out there. Go live in Arizona. Go live in Las Vegas. Go live in Sun City, where my dad bought his home. We're now saying, I'm staying in San Clemente till you come out feet first. And it's like, well, but you ain't paying the bills. Your property taxes aren't keeping up with our costs here. You're not shopping as much as you used to. In fact, you cost us more because we got to have all these services to meet your needs. Forget it. Kick them all out. It's supposed to be for a young person's community, growing family community, and the old people should get kicked out and warehoused and corralled in some other place, a assisted living home that we designate or an assisted living community.
Well, and
kick
and,
us all out.
And what does that do?
It gets the problem, puts it isolated where nobody has to ever see it.
Well, we're going to isolate 78 million people?
Yeah. Right.
Where are you going to isolate 7-8 million people exactly?
Out in the middle of nowhere. We're going to build these giant camps, and we're going to send them there. We're going to call them all Sun City. And
you're going to encamp seniors.
Yeah. So that way their kids will say, "Oh, Grandma, Grandpa, they're taking care of. They have a billiard room. They have a movie room.
I got a newsflash. I got a newsflash for you, right?
Yeah.
Who votes?
Not the young people.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not going.
The minute you start threatening people's residences that are their nest eggs, especially if they are seniors, you better have put on your big boy pants because you're about to get a real thrashing.
Yeah, I'm just saying we used to have. I'm making an extreme case. We used to have a system where you left where you raised your family and you went somewhere else, and they sold us on this idea of retiring somewhere: Florida, Arizona, Palm Springs. That model, for some reason, lost its appeal, and now people like me are staying in their homes much longer than I thought I would.
Yeah.
Maybe for the rest of my life, if my wife has any say in it. The irony is, I have a foot in both worlds. I inherited a home in Sun City. It's a beautiful home. It's on a golf course. It's got a view of the mountain. It's got a pool in it. It's great. It's sitting there right now.
But you're not there.
I'm not there.
Why are you not there?
Because one, my work is here. And when my work is
But your work is by your choice, Paul.
Yeah.
You could have built this whole thing out in Sun City.
Clearly, my wife doesn't want to hear about it. You would have probably had
a little bit more of a monopoly in a way over there.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
My wife is the biggest impediment because she doesn't want to leave our daughter and grandson. Nor do I. She doesn't want to be with a bunch of old people. She doesn't want that to be isolated. She doesn't buy that model at all. She might when she's 80, but for right now, she ain't buying it. So we rent it seasonally so that we can hold on to it, pay the costs, and see what happens in 10 years. That's the plan. That's the only plan I've gotten.
And how long have you had that plan?
4 years now. 4 years, yeah. So we got, I say, another, I'm 61, so by the time I'm 70 and she's in her 70s, I'm hoping we'll revisit all this stuff.
Right, but
so I'm thinking our needs will have changed.
That's the other point, right? Is that decision, the expectations or the common thinking was that those decisions were made at 65.
Yeah.
Now they're being made at 70 and 72.
Exactly. She wants to delay. I don't want to.
Right.
She's still working.
But I think that's common.
I think that's very common.
Right.
And so
in today's reality,
oddly enough, that property hasn't accumulated the way I thought it would. Because I thought, wow, when the baby boom retires, they're all going to want these kind of places, and I got one. No, the baby boom doesn't want to move out to the desert. The baby boom doesn't want to leave where they raised their children and built a community for themselves.
Exactly.
And go uproot themselves at the last stage of their life
and that is part of your well-being, right?
Right.
That's part of your mental,
sure, well-being,
your mental mindset. And your mental mindset being healthy, mm-hmm. is that fresh air, is the familiarity of surroundings, it's the multi-generational nature of your neighborhood, it's not being restricted or limited to what you mm-hmm. can do and how long you can be active and involved in stuff, to have independence in what you're doing.
Why your business exists. Make your home a home for a lifetime. To take this home that you thought was only going to be for a certain period of your life and extend it into old age by adapting the stairs, all the bathrooms and the counter heights
and it has financial impacts that are positive, because when you're sitting in that home, it's appreciating. You're not basically spending $2,000 to $8,000 to $10,000 in terms of assisted living or some sort of place. You're not risking the fact that at the top of a market you're going to sell a property, and now you got to figure out a way to make sure that you don't pay taxes. You don't lose any value in the process.
Right.
You're still able, mobile, active, mentally acute, all of this stuff, and basically are now going to basically move yourself to another environment. That is the quickest way for your mental health and well-being to basically collapse mm-hmm. or deteriorate, because you're taking yourself out of a comfortable environment in which you have built roots. Before you actually have to be incapacitated mm-hmm. and basically putting yourself into a completely unfamiliar environment. Now, there's some people that can do it, but you know what? There's always a little bit of cost, even for those who are very social, that are very active, that will still go out.
Now, I will say this in defense of the Sun Cities, because my parents went through the same curve. My mother wouldn't leave of the house that we had back in suburban Detroit. She stayed with her job way too long. She ended up getting kicked out. This is my dad. They both didn't want to leave their careers, and so they both ended up getting kicked out, and that was horrible and difficult and depressing. Now they're in this big house back in suburban Detroit and Bloomfield Hills, and they're back there by themselves. And bit by bit, everybody they knew died or left. Mm-hmm. So now they're the only old folks in the neighborhood. And while far from being multi-generational, the kids didn't come around to see them or talk to them or whatever. There was no connection with these new couples or these new people. They were in a big house, and they were in a snow environment, which is the worst.
Right.
Because my dad couldn't do the driveway anymore. He couldn't.
Right, those are physical limitations.
And so they finally got more and more isolated. And those last years were awful for them. There, they didn't know anybody. They didn't go out. They rattled around this big house. It was a big pain.
So how was it for them when they moved to Sun City?
It was like a rebirth. In three ways. One, they got rid of all this stuff that they had accumulated over 50 years of marriage or something, and that was frightening. And then it was liberating, because they went and bought new furniture and new things and stuff.
So and Sun City was out in the desert.
Yeah. And then two, it was warm.
Where the young people are moving and buying houses.
Yeah, now. Right. It was warm out
so
there.
You're not...
So they weren't afraid of falling. You've never lived in a snow environment, but as you get older, you just get frightened of falling.
I spent four years in Europe, in Switzerland.
Oh, Switzerland. There you go.
Well, so, but I mean, no, I get it.
Yeah, right.
You know, we jokingly say that in California we don't do seasons, let alone change of age.
Right. So they found it safer. They found it. The warmth was something they never experienced their whole life. Safer, single story versus a two story house. Easier to take care of, smaller. You know, all the stuff done for them here, and suddenly they were surrounded by people their age who had all come for the same reason, because they had all been left alone and isolated in some other part of the country, and they all came to make something, to have fun in this last week. And I tell you, the people out there have more fun than I do. There's more activities, more things to do, more neighbors, more things, parties going on and whatnot, and more support. And the great medical facilities nearby. They didn't have to drive very far. So everything they were looking for. So I really think at some point in our life, the baby boomers will still have those same needs to leave and go somewhere
else. But they're later in life.
They're later in life.
Right. And
so I'm keeping this in the bank as kind of my get out of jail free card with the
sense of health and awareness and medical advancements and all this stuff. That's a trend that isn't going to reverse itself.
No.
It's going to get even longer and longer. And there's a real life financial reason. The longer you can postpone this, the less cost impact it is on your life.
Right. So will your parents stay in San Clemente their whole life, or will they eventually downsize and go somewhere else? And if they do, will it be in the same community, or will it be in a community of other people like
given them? given my parents' personalities, given the cultural aspect, which is again something we don't talk about a lot here, but that is also a factor. I think they will probably stay in their house. I mean, I'm just looking at my grandparents on both sides. They both stayed in their house. They moved from where they had originally lived, but early enough to where they were still healthy, because of the need for some medical.
What if they can't handle the house? It becomes a burden, the cutting the grass, the taking care of things.
But that's part of the planning. Like, there is no lawn in the house.
Right.
It's a 10,000-square-foot house that has no lawn.
Has no lawn?
No.
Okay.
There's a garden that has trees and a gardener that comes once every other week, and basically does some maintenance.
Right.
The house itself is built in such a manner that, yes, there is maintenance, but there isn't, you know, like there's no wood shingles. There's, you know, it's like stucco and tile and you know, hard surfaces, and there's no transition up and down.
Right.
You know, so we did a bunch of that stuff. Now, technically, the only thing that they cannot have available in their house, in the house currently, is medical assistance.
Right.
But there's a downstairs bedroom that could easily have that care if need be, if it can be sustained without it being having to be 24 hours or something like that, because then the cost factor becomes too high.
And what about the isolation of they? It's all people that are much younger than they are in the neighborhood. So
but that's the other thing, and I think that's a thing that's sort of interesting personality. My father is an engineer, so he tends to be very much, he doesn't really have that social circles. You know, he had them when he was working overseas with people, like but it was dad, through work, which is not uncommon for guys to have that social network through work.
That was my dad.
Right. But so he's in his library and he's reading and he's, you know, sort of, and I worry because that's sort of not a healthy thing, and I'm watching him deteriorate a little bit in front of me, but that's not really where his life was one way and then it became this another way because people around him died.
Right.
My mother is a little bit different, but then my mother's dynamic is that she's a caregiver. She's a mother. You know, she's so that motherly role. She takes care of the family. She takes care of her husband and stuff of that nature. And so to her, I think she would probably get a little bit more involved. But I don't see her where she is, like, you know, needing to have those all that activities and all that stuff around her. In fact, it probably would cause her to feel a little bit, like, suffocated, like, with all that stuff going on.
Right.
So, again, we talk about this, that wellness, that aging is not a one-size-fits-all.
No. For my parents, it was the most frightening thing they ever did in their life. I remember flying back to Michigan after they'd sold everything, every stick of furniture they had accumulated and taken with them on the dozen moves around the country here, every lamp, every chair, every piece of thing they got rid of. And they took their bed, and my dad said it was like when we were starting all over, it's like when we first got married. We had a bed and we had a card table. And he said that's all they kept, took with them to California, bed and a card table they had shipped out here. So they have some place to sit. And my dad found it invigorating. My mother cried like crazy. It was, I remember a picture, I have a picture of her sitting in this big house.
She cried like crazy when they moved?
Oh, yeah. So that they sold off everything. got rid of everything, had nothing, starting all over again. And I flew back to Michigan to take them on the, you know, accompany them back out here to this new life, this new place. And my mother sat in the house, totally empty, and just cried. And just like, oh, my God, I've lost everything. And now she comes out, and it's sunny. And suddenly there's neighbors their age who are coming over and saying, hey, you know, somebody to talk to and somebody to have a cocktail with or somebody to go do something with. And suddenly they're buying new stuff, and they're like a young couple again, and they're redecorating the house with all brand new stuff. And that sum total went from the total fear to the most amazing. It extended both of their lives dramatically and made them happier and healthier and everything. It got them out of that isolation that they had found themselves accidentally. What turned out to be their life's dream, this big house and all these things, turned out to be a giant albatross, a giant burden on them. And when they finally let go of all that stuff, it was so invigorating. And to have one more move and one more group of people and to go someplace where everybody had a similar mindset was phenomenal. So it worked well for them. But the baby boomers, like my wife was saying, maybe someday, but not now, baby. And I ain't going to 65 or 75.
And even if you argue that the baby boomers will follow in transitional step patterns and, you know, migration patterns, if you want to call them that, the time duration between those migration time spots, milestones, is longer.
Yes.
So it brings me back to what I was talking about, okay? We keep talking about things in terms of, you know, sustaining economic engines, paying for things, which technically we all argue, well, we got to do this because it's how we sustain situations, right?
We need that toll road to bring more people in and bring more revenue in.
Right, but the problem is
your parents ain't paying enough in property taxes.
But the problem is that's not going to happen. Okay, and it's never pitched, by the way, that way. It's pitched.
No.
You know, I'll tell you. I mean, it's kind of fascinating, right? We are sheep sometimes, honestly, and we need to look beyond just what we are fed in the wait a minute. We have no time. We are rushing at a million miles an hour, and we are fed little morsels of tidbits, and we absorb those morsels, and we don't look any further because, well, guess what? We have no time,
right?
And we're too busy, and we have no mental wellness, and we're fatigued and tired, and we have, you know, almost like, you know, where they torture people by having the lights and the sound bombarding the building 24/7 until they crack, right?
Right.
I mean, we kind of don't have somebody externally doing that to us. We're doing it to ourselves. We're constantly torturing ourselves with sound stimulation, noise, light constantly. I mean, your little monitor screen is light in your face 24/7.
Yeah. Your little bathing me, comforting me, soothing me. Well, it's funny. We've had the chairman of OCTA in here several times, and used to do a show with one of the former mayors here who served on, I don't know, whatever that regional transportation body is that oversees all this stuff here, and made up of elected officials. And he used to always get angry about this. And we need more of those toll roads, and not we got to finish the toll roads and all this stuff. And I'd say, I'm sorry, but I'm one of the guys that fought against it. And he'd say, why? It's a safety issue. I wouldn't want to live in
safety my ass.
Says, where do you live?
Can I safety my ass on? Okay, safety my ass. Okay.
He literally used to say, I say, where do you live? I say, I live in Rancho Santa Margarita.
I challenge anybody who gives me that BS about safety to answer the following question.
Okay,
you talk about safety and you talk about relief and what if something happens to San Onofre and we want to be able to get people out of that area.
That's right, exactly.
Explain to me then, are you building a one-way road?
Get them out.
Because if you're building a one-way road, you need less land to build it on, which makes the opportunities and options for where to put it more. Okay, and guess what? We may not have an issue because you can put it closer to San Onofre. You can go across the top through Rancho Mission Viejo,
right?
Okay, and drop it off and avoid all the area like San Clemente that doesn't even build on friggin' ridges because we want to protect the environment.
But that was how it was sold to the public. That was one of the main things, is safety.
It's not really for traffic, Paul.
No.
It is not safety.
It's for development.
I have spent 3 weeks, okay, taking, and I'll put it out there for anybody who wants to do this, okay? Try it for yourselves, okay? My mom and dad used to tell me, oh, you know, we don't take the toll road. And I'm going, oh, they're old. They don't want to spend the money.
Right?
Oh, I'm dynamic, active, young person.
I'll
take the
fast
toll road, right? They would tell me that it's the same time and it's the same distance. Now, my argument was, well, but when there's traffic, you know, then it takes a little longer. You know what we're talking about? We're talking about 2 to 3 minutes. We're talking about the cost that continues to go up. It's like a friggin' stock market.
Sure.
During high rush hour traffic on the 91 freeway, right. Currently it is $20 each way. On normal traffic, it's $9 to $10 each way. I had a person who I know who's on Facebook today complain about it's $10 each way, and it's all she's sitting there looking at backs of red lights.
Right.
Right. So this perceived convenience.
Well, I'll push back a little bit on that. I come to the studio from Rancho Santa Margarita, which is, if you're listening to a podcast, you can't picture this, but I live in the south part of the county, and the studio's in the
south. In
the middle of nowhere. And for me, if I cross the freeway and pick up the toll road and go north, I can make it absolutely in 25 minutes. Guaranteed. Any time of day.
If you take the toll road.
Take the toll road. Okay. I can do the same thing, maybe even a little less if I take the regular freeway, the 5 freeway, but not in rush hour. So, like, tomorrow morning when I have to start early, I don't even try taking the regular road because it could take me an hour or 2 hours to get that same distance through rush hour traffic going north on the 5. It's just unpredictable. It literally could take an hour. Whereas I know it'll take me, if I pay for it, 25 minutes.
And how much is your bill when you are yet regularly using the toll road?
I don't want to look at it. I don't want to know that.
I'll tell you what mine is. And this is separate. My wife has her own.
Yeah.
And I have my own, right? I was paying $500 a quarter.
Wow.
So for anybody who tells me, oh, I need it for driving to work, I'm telling you, know what? I challenge you. I have jobs all the way from Simi Valley to San Diego.
Right.
Okay? And I have tried for 3 weeks to avoid the toll road usage, just to see for myself, take
Could
that challenge,
right.
Do that detox, right? do the detox, okay? Get off the
fast track.
The you know, recover.
It's called fast track.
Get a little recovery going. Get a little recovery going, right? I tried it for 3 weeks so far, okay? And I will continue to try it for a quarter just so that I have a benchmark of what comparison, right? And I can do a side-by-side bill comparison. Now, I'll be the first to admit that in any form of, you know, I'm not looking for somebody to be 100% recovery,
right?
And they're slipping, right? People slip. When you're a user, you slip.
There are times you got to be from one place to the next. The only way to know you're going to do that here in Southern California is the toll road. But for every other time, you can figure out a way around it. But if you've absolutely got to be there at 9 o'clock.
I went to yesterday.
Right.
We took off from home in San Clemente. Took my mom to the airport in LAX.
Right.
Okay. Yes, we had two people in a carpool.
Right.
But we left San Clemente at 4:45.
Right.
She was checked in at LAX International, Bradley International Terminal by 6:15.
You're lucky.
I came back from. I'll play along. I came back from LAX solo in my car. On the 405, down, connecting to the 22. Actually, I didn't even go to the 22. I took the 55 and went around to Santa Ana. Mm-hmm. I was in Santa Ana by 7:30. My point is this.
You know, though, that sometimes, because I've tried it coming to the studio at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I can't afford to be late. I can't say, well, today it took me an hour to get here. I could get up earlier. I could leave at 7 or something, but I don't want to do that.
Right. So what I'm saying is it's not a necessity. It's a convenience.
Yeah, when I have to be somewhere in a prescribed period of time, I take the toll
and as such,
every other time.
And as such, that convenience has to make sense at a cost factor.
Right.
When it starts being $500 a quarter at $2,000 a year, that's 4 months of me doing this radio show.
Right. We're not supposed to give that away, but
well, 4 months for me to do that radio show at halftime.
But
you're right, because it's actually twice that. But my point is this: my point is that it is a convenience that we basically get accustomed to certain things, not because they're the best thing for us.
Rod, you come in with a cup of coffee. Everybody comes in with these Starbucks. Try giving up Starbucks for a quarter.
I actually have, I because it's too bitter.
I mean, I can't believe
for
what
me.
People pay for a Starbucks. I don't like coffee, so I never got hooked on it. Coffee used to be free. Coffee is something you can make at home and take with you. Why does everybody have to stop and get their Starbucks?
Right, but see, and people go, well, this is all over the map. It's not. We're talking about exactly the same thing. It's taking enough time for yourself
right.
to make that cup of coffee in the morning. I don't necessarily grind my own beans every day,
right.
But I have pre-ground stuff, and I put it in my French press, and I press down one cup of coffee. It takes 4 minutes for the thing to brew. You can basically twiddle your thumb or shower while you're doing whatever, right? You press down on this thing. You have a fresh cup of coffee brewed at home to your liking, to your level of acidity, all of that stuff. You don't have to wait in line. It would take longer to wait in line to get a cup of coffee than you doing it at home. But the idea, the mentality is, no, I'll get it on my way because it'll be faster. I'll take the alternative route because it'll be faster. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is we get into this cycle because we are mentally tired. We are constantly in a non-silent environment, and we can't friggin' think straight. Brought it back around.
I think you did.
Okay.
We're
out of time. But I will encourage everybody to look up information on May being mental health month.
Go look at OC Talk Radio right there. I'm pointing at
OC it. Talk Radio. There's Paul. Hi, I'm waving behind Paul.
Okay.
He's got top billing on the camera.
You
got a pen going on? Okay.
You always have to point the opposite way you think you're pointing.
I'm pointing at you.
Okay.
So OC Talk Radio. Net.
Yes.
The Rad Life on Facebook. Send me information. Send us comments. If you listen to this later on, you can reach me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, @gmail.com. Look for us on next month to do some more stuff. And I do want to end with one thing.
Somebody's calling to listen.
Wow. Yeah, we have somebody who's calling in to listen. If you are trying to listen to The Rad Life on Wednesdays from 12 to 1, more or less, you can go to octalkradio.net and you can click the Listen Live button, or you can catch us on OC Talk Radio's YouTube station or the Facebook pages, as well as the Facebook page for The Rad Life. And there's usually a link to the YouTube.
She didn't want to do this, but we got to put her on the air.
Okay.
What's your name, caller, and why were you calling to listen? I didn't know you were, I never thought to call to listen.
I was taking a look on Facebook, and I just saw a second ago that there was a telephone number, so I thought it was to be able to listen in.
Oh, yeah. You can listen. We stream this live over the Internet, octalkradio.net.
Okay.
Or you can hear it live streamed over Facebook, over our channel or the different show's channel, in this case the Rad Life's channel here. So, yeah, you don't have to call us up to listen. You can call up to be on the air like you are now. So who are you, and where are you from, and why are you listening?
Oh, Rad, it's Dawn.
Hi, Dawn.
Dawn from Massachusetts. How are you?
I'm good, Dawn.
So you can go on the Internet right now, octalkradio.net, hit Listen Live, and you'll be listening to it. You don't have to use an old-fashioned phone to call in here.
So Dawn, yes. we're about to go off the air, but, hey, I had a good opportunity to say hello, so thanks for calling. And we'll probably have the content of this, Paul, pretty quickly here because it's on YouTube, right? So she can probably go back and click
within
on
an hour or so. She'll be able to go to OC Talk Radio Costa Mesa. That's our YouTube channel, OC Talk Radio Costa Mesa. So YouTube/OC Talk Radio Costa Mesa,
and look for the Rad Life
latest issue
recording. And I'll also put it on mine, and you can click through there. Hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And let me know what you think, okay?
So we're going to hang out with you now, Dawn.
All right. Thanks, Dawn.
Right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Well, that's a first.
That was interesting.
I had to just put her in the air. Somebody called. And,
So one thing I do want to, and at this point we probably lost everybody who was listening anyway, but I did want to say this to you. You know about this, and I want whoever's still with us. May 24th, we have a new thing happening.
We do.
Right. Which is going to cut into our loose-fitting, loosey-goosey kind of...
Go as long as we feel like it.
Go as long as we feel like on The Rad Life, because it's technically 12 to 1. So
right.
Starting May 24th, on from 1 to 2, there will be a new radio show that I will be co-hosting.
So you'll do 2 hours back-to-back here, one about The Rad Life and one about...
California hospitality industry. And the gentleman I will be co-hosting with is a friend of mine, a good buddy of mine, Craig Sullivan. And Craig will be seeing in Vegas later on, probably today, for the Hospitality Design Expo. But
so by going along, we've built an audience, an expectation that there's content here during this time period, and now we're going to fill it We're going to stick to the 1 hour with the Rad Life, and 1 hour with the California Hospitality.
It's a show on California hospitality and hotel industry and all the things.
What do you think people are going to hear about that? How will we tie the two together here? Is it this
because I think you know, we talk about wellness, we talk about boomers, we talk about, you know, there's no way of avoiding anything that is any industry and the impact of boomers on that industry, especially in California. There's also, you know, we'll talk about construction, we'll talk about trends, we'll talk about spa and wellness, we'll talk about financing, we'll talk about the thing about California hospitality is we are the sixth largest economy in the world.
Yes.
And yet we don't have a California hospitality focus. Mm-hmm. And that's why Craig last year, 2017, put on the very first California Lodging Investment Conference, CLIC. Mm-hmm. And I've known him from before. I'm a sponsor for next year. I'll be actually doing the stage for the expo, and it'll be down or the conference. It'll be here in Orange County again on Bristol at the Hilton. But also, we've been talking about the need for this sort of conversational stuff. And there's a lot of great people that are out there, men and women that are in the industry in different capacities, that are in this very innovative market that we are in, which is California. And we want to bring those people into the studio, and we want to be able to talk to people about what they're doing, you know, share best practices, things of that nature. And we do have a name for the show.
Oh, finally. Okay. It is?
Check Out California.
That could be a slogan, even, like, you know, it happens in Vegas kind of thing.
Check Out California.
I like that.
As in,
I like it a lot.
As in, check into the radio show.
Check it out, or check out
California. Yeah. Because, you know, in California, we just tell everybody, hey, check it out. So check
I
out California.
Love that.
Yeah, we did Check Out California, and we do have the domain name.
Here's another suggestion. We've just gone so far along, but hey, we're going to fill it up. It's coming soon.
I'm claiming this territory anyway.
This is your territory.
I'm actually squatting, right?
That's right, exactly. You're squatting in this time. Here's what's interesting about that. We've done some public policy shows, quite a number of them.
Man, he's going to run until 2 o'clock with me on this.
I might. And we, through that, discovered the ugly secret that nobody wants to talk about, that there is an overall Orange County travel something, or Orange County Convention and Visitors page, but it's not much. Most of the cities don't want to cooperate in promoting a regional approach to tourism, like other areas do.
Mm-hmm.
The cities want to claim it for themselves. So Huntington Beach wants everybody to go stay at the Huntington Beach Resort. Anaheim, of course, has the biggest convention and visitors bureau because they have the convention and they want everybody to stay at Disneyland there. And as part of that, they don't really want you to leave. They'll say they do, but they don't really want you to. There's some argument of, do they want you to leave the property and go to Huntington Beach and then go down to the Missions in San Juan or go other places here.
Right.
And so each of those different cities, some better, some worse, some big like Anaheim, some little like other cities here, are trying to figure out how to do that. And my point was, why don't we have a regional thing? Why isn't Orange County the destination? Go see all of this. Don't just go in Disney, you know, and all these other people are like, well, that's great, but that means one day less on our property here and one day more on that guy's property.
You know, and that's sort of the sad reality of life, I think, on a lot of levels, is that you have more people that operate in that capacity, which is really very myopic, in my opinion, and it's very it may be quarterly result-oriented, but it's definitely not long-term expert position marketing, you know, kind of claiming that territory.
And the more there is to do out here, aren't you more likely to come back?
Absolutely.
If it's just Disneyland, then once you did that, you're going to go somewhere else.
But I can't blame companies, for example, and people that are acting in the capacity of company representatives to be focused on what my quarterly results are that quarter, right?
So I'll give you another.
So you need to have the right platform to cross into that wider, bigger tent.
So I think there's a space or a place in your new show for that conversation, particularly using Orange County as an example. Is there a regional approach to hospitality and to tourism, or is it all just city by city, and are we fighting for the next city, the same dollars to stay in my city as that? And I'll give you another example of that. Mayor Miguel Pulido from Anaheim was in here, and for those who don't know, there is a streetcar that has been funded now, finally, at least some initial stage of it, and it's supposed to go from Santa Ana to Garden Grove. And why? Because they want to tie, they want you to be able to go from the train station over to some, Garden Grove is an interesting example. They've been trying to capitalize on their proximity to both Anaheim and Santa Ana regional transportation hub. Trains and buses at Anaheim and all this stuff there at what do they call it? Arctic. And if you haven't seen that thing, go drive by it right next to the stadiums over there. The big hub that they
Arctic is it
Anaheim
is
Regional Transportation.
It connects the Metrolink?
The Metrolink, Amtrak,
and
buses.
So it's a major train hub.
And they think it'll eventually be, if there is a high-speed rail, it'll be the hub for that. And
It's definitely built to look like that.
Yeah, and if it ever is a high-speed rail like they've envisioned going to Vegas, it'll be the hub for that, too. So it's designed with that hope in mind that it'll grow and become like this regional transportation center with all these different modes of transportation tied together, buses, trains, and, well, there'd be no planes, but other sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And one of them would be this trolley. And so Santa Ana trolley, I don't think would connect with that, but the idea is to move people around regionally from city to city. That they have fought that for years. Garden Grove wants it. They've tried to build hotels and hospitality, saying if you don't want to stay in Anaheim, stay just a couple miles away over here in Garden Grove. And they tried to build the city, whatever it was called, the city something mall there next to the Crystal Cathedral. Whatever that was called. Yeah. They changed the name of it.
Well, that's the name of the exit, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And
the city.
And that you would somehow get all of this stuff. They would somehow siphon, they would pull some of that stuff away from the Anaheim resort area over to their area. People would stay there and play there and eat there. Anaheim fought that like
crazy. And it's mostly empty, by the way.
Yeah, well, because they've never been able
to. That's the one that by UCI?
Yes.
By the hospital?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they've never been able to really successfully get people the notion that if you're going to Disneyland or you're going to all the baseball games or you're doing all these things in the Anaheim Resort District, as they call it, that a couple miles away, here's another fun place to stay and play. Buena Park's been trying to get them to go north up into revived around beach area. Everybody's been trying to tap into that and grow the circle larger. Santa Ana would certainly like to do that and get more people just to come down a few miles and go to the hip restaurants in downtown and all that. So all this influx of tourism that's coming in, rather than have them stay within a couple mile radius there, they'd like to expand that radius. Everybody's been fighting that tooth and nail. So one of the hopes is that this trolley, this Santa Ana trolley, this Orange County trolley line, to be the first, could get extended to airports and other things eventually, will at least take them from Santa Ana to Garden Grove. Now, for those who know Garden Grove and Santa Ana, those aren't the two garden spots of Orange County here, right?
Right.
But they're trying to create some connection between them and collectively to find a way to connect what is cool and hip in those two communities.
Well, you know, there was a report yesterday that came out that talked about Costa Mesa basically becoming, you know, how did Costa Mesa become the cool hub in Orange County for food and beverage, right?
By accident. Well, not by accident.
It wasn't by accident. I saw it start happening in 1994, and I'll give credit in a big part to the person who was involved, which is my friend Shane Sadeghi at the lab.
He was the primary driver.
I remember the laughter that he got from people. Oh, this
Costa
Mesa.
Work.
Costa
yeah.
Mesa, the elbow. Remember the armpit of Bristol?
Yeah.
Right. It's not the armpit of Bristol anymore.
No.
Right. I think the interesting thing for tourism in California, and I've been here since 85. Okay, so I haven't been here for all my life, but I've been here since 85, and it's changed quite a bit.
You followed me. I came in 80.
Okay, so you know there are certain destinations, there are certain things on the list for people to do when they come in.
Disneyland,
Universal Studios, Hollywood, Sunset, you know, Melrose, if you're kind of hip and want to buy some stuff,
right.
Venice,
maybe,
right?
Yeah, right?
And there's a certain aspect of neighborhoods like Maria del Rey, Playa del Rey, Hermosa, you know, versus Manhattan,
Redondo,
Santa
Hermosa,
Monica versus, you know, or Malibu versus Santa Monica, that the people there don't want to be bothered. They'd rather not have that tourist drive, right?
San Clemente
is another one, right. And the interesting thing is,
not hungry to get all this tourist to put that on the list and come down there.
Well, the interesting thing is, I don't know that even if you provided that connectivity,
that people are just going to gravitate towards that. To your point, there has to be some reason why. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, everybody is so, you know, wanting their
piece of the pie
that they don't really want to encourage other things. And that's where...
Look what's happening in Huntington Beach. There's an example that where that town, unlike any of the beach towns here in Orange County, has accepted this role. They have these big events, and they're physically trying to bring other ones in. We had the mayor of Huntington Beach in there. Their goal is to have year-round events going on. That's why they have this big air show that last year was the first year. It'll be in October that they think will bring a couple hundred thousand people in to watch the air show over the beach.
You know what part of the problem?
And the Surf Pro and all these other big events.
You know what part of the problem is, Paul? I'll tell you. We faced this when we were trying to program and plan for the California Historical Preservation Foundation's conference a couple of years back that took place in Orange County. They usually take place on different parts of California.
Right.
Up till the point where they actually had it in Orange County, that conference always was based in a town, in a city. In like Oakland or something,
right?
Never in a county.
Well, exactly.
Right.
There's no place in America that functions as a county like we do, has an image, a brand of a county.
But when we tried it here, it took a lot of work because even with that idea, how do you connect? And ironically to what you were saying, the way we came about the connecting of all these, like Fullerton and the Muckenthaler Center and Romantic down in San Clemente and the Balboa Pavilion and all this stuff,
lots of cool things to do, the
Anaheim Packing House, which basically got awarded for the best adaptive reuse that year by the conference. The connection was the train system.
Yeah.
Because the connection in Orange County was that you have these produce and you have the orange and you have all this stuff. And these areas were connected
by train
through a train system.
Interesting, yeah.
Right? That basically start off with ranches and then, growers and all this stuff. And that's how we made that connection. But I think even though we refer to ourselves as Orange County, I don't think Orange County really markets itself as Orange County.
No, because there's no marketing agency. That's the whole point. Because we're...
Sadly.
There's a county government, but we're really 34 cities collectively all going their own way and doing their own thing. But oddly enough, we've developed into a brand. And I've argued this before. Think about this. I don't know why nobody focuses on this. I've been all over the
country.
That's
a really good conversation to have on that show.
It really is.
Yeah.
And think about this, for example. I've been all over the country. I've been to 49 of the 50 states. The only one I've never been to is Alaska. I've been everywhere in the country. And not just in an airplane, driving, living places, doing things. Think of any other place in America except Orange County where you refer to it by the county name. When I lived in Detroit, I didn't say, well, I'm going to Wayne County. I'm from Wayne County or I'm from Oakland County. When you're in Dallas, you don't say, I'm from Tarrant County or something here. Mm-hmm. You never refer to people don't travel. The county doesn't have a brand. People don't travel to the county. The newspaper isn't named after the county. The airport isn't named after the county. Bit by bit, we've created, by accident or design...
Even Los Angeles County doesn't do it, by the way.
No.
It's Hollywood. It's the West Side.
The East. Yeah, right, exactly. So we have the only county brand in America. It started with the county. We're the only county that had a newspaper. The Santa Ana said they're not going to be the Santa Ana Register anymore. They're going to be the Orange County Register.
By the way, where did they move to?
Anaheim now. They're up in Anaheim. Just some office building. And
be interesting to see what happens to that old iconic building.
Well, the guy Mike Hara bought it, who's bought all these other iconic buildings in Santa Ana, and he has plans for it, I guess.
Interesting.
He owns Original Mike's, the restaurant over there, and he owns tons of he bought up all these high-rise buildings when they were all abandoned in Santa Ana. Bit by bit, he's been rehabbing them and turning them into successful properties here. So he must have some vision for that. But the point is that we have a county brand by accident. It started with the paper. Then I remember when it used to be the airport was in Santa Ana, and it was John Wayne Airport. Santa Ana Airport.
Still referred to as Santa Ana.
Yeah, it still has
SNA.
SNA, right. But it's no longer called it. It's officially Orange County Airport. And now when you look it up, I'm flying to Orange County. I'm not flying to Boston. I'm not flying to Toledo today. I'm flying to Orange County. So and then we had the TV shows, the real OC and the OC and all that kind of stuff. all of this developed this image that collectively I don't think the cities have embraced. They certainly haven't kicked into a common kitty to say, let's promote this brand of Orange County.
But don't you think that's
they promote Huntington Beach. They promote San Clemente.
Don't you think that's kind of bizarre?
I think it's very bizarre.
I mean, because we do take on things as a county.
Yes.
You know, not to bring it back up, but, you know, our arterial road system, our communication.
Orange County Transportation Authority that runs the buses and all the other stuff and the Metrolinx and
that's
all the
things.
That's
really fascinating.
It hasn't been by design.
I kind of knew that wasn't what we were doing, but I never really had the conversation about it.
We did the show for a couple of years with the Orange County Association of California Association. California Association of Cities, Orange County. The Orange County chapter of the California Association of Cities. And so they had like 30 of the 34 cities belong to their group. And, boy, they blew up one time when the late Eric Spitzer wrote a op-ed in the Register before he lost it and said, maybe we'd be better served if we merged all these 30 cities into one or two mega cities. Then we would be New York promoting New York County, you know, New York County, New York City. We'd be L.A. County, L.A. City. We'd be Orange County, and we'd be Orange City if we had just one. They went berserk over that because this is still a collection of little tiny communities.
You can't do that. You can't do that, and I think you're going to have pushback
because
of that level of how much do I want to promote.
So we all love our little neighborhoods. You love San Clemente. Somebody else loves Huntington Beach. Somebody else loves Garden Grove.
But the reality is, and we've kind of touched on that before when we were talking about the economic engines. The economic engines in Southern California and more so in San Orange County because of the open ranchos that we had, has been real estate development.
Yes.
As we have seen, the real estate availability has shrunk.
The green fields have disappeared.
The green fields have disappeared. The balance between built and non-built environment
is almost built out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with that term, almost built out, now we're seeing higher density high-rise.
Have to.
That are happening, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But what we're also...
And people don't like that or accept it, and they're fighting it everywhere. Huntington Beach, they fought a density project. Every time one of those goes in, the neighbors, particularly the older community, screams and hollers. And to a certain degree, they've got some proof to it, because what about the roads? What about transportation? What about schools? What about all the other stuff? Do we really want more people packed in here?
Well, but Paul, there's another factor, which is that basically it's... It isn't necessarily the most efficient or sustainable. Let's not say efficient, sustainable. It's what we it's what we know.
I'll fix it. You've raised
Yeah, it's what we know, but it's not necessarily where we need to be in order to sustain in the future. Mm-hmm. Then that's where places that are built out, okay, unless you start tearing down and doing infill projects, and then even with that, there's a finite amount of how much you can do. So all you're doing is kicking the can down the road to make money right now for whoever is basically a vested partner in the situation.
Right.
And 10 years from now, we'll still be in a situation where now we don't – what are we going to do now to sustain our costs, you know, with an older population, staying in their houses longer, all this stuff. The real estate model is not going to sustain Orange County in the future. We have to start developing things like destination tourism, heritage tourism, innovation, small impact, high.
And for that, you need, I'd argue, a community-wide effort, a county-wide effort.
I thought we had a bunch of supervisors that are supposed to be doing that. Well,
go look up the Orange County Visitors and Travelers site, and it's almost non-existent. Orange County Visitors Bureau, or whatever it's called. It's underfunded and underactive, and or maybe we have somebody in from that organization to this show. I have no idea what they do. Anaheim has a huge Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Wait, from which organization?
Orange County. I think it's the Orange County Visitors Bureau or something.
That's Anaheim.
No, but there's another. There's a county.
It's Visit Anaheim.
No, but there is an Orange County one, and it's almost like non-existent. I'll have to look at it. We as a county... We have a very small visitors and tourism or whatever it is thing here that the county does. It's been done city by city. And the biggest city, of course, is Anaheim, which has the big convention and visitors bureau because they got the convention. And they see themselves as the center of the county. And Santa Ana says, no, we're the center of the county. Because we have all the government buildings. And Huntington Beach says, well, you may have it, but you don't have any resorts. Do you know there are no 4-star resorts in Anaheim? So Disneyland and all this stuff, they're trying to build one. That's a new push, too. They're trying to get somebody to build a 4 or 5-star resort. There are 4 or 5-star resorts along the ocean. Mm-hmm. In Dana Point and in Huntington Beach now and other places. So there is no countywide, there is very little countywide planning or push. We don't have a budget to go visit OC around the world. We have budgets to go visit Huntington Beach. We have budgets to go visit Anaheim. We have budgets to go visit other cities here. Even though the world tends to think of us more and more by the name of our airport, by the name of our newspaper, by the TV shows that have been done about it as the OC.
I'm going to Orange County.
Yeah.
They don't go, I'm going to Newport Beach.
And when I travel around the country?
I'm going to Orange County. Where are you staying? Newport Beach. Where are you staying?
Exactly.
Laguna.
So we've created this brand by accident or almost without any government's official support. And the official entity, there is nobody pushing that brand. That's the whole point. That brand has developed, sprung up on its own. That image has sprung up on its own, and a few other people have adapted it. So now everybody thinks of us. We're the only place in America that refers to the county we live in, not the city we live in. I'm going to the OC. I live in Orange County. When I travel around the country, I don't say I'm from Rancho Santa Margarita. Nobody knows where that is. I'd say I'm from Orange County. I don't do that when I live in Tarrant County. I don't do that when I live in Wayne County in Detroit. I don't say I'm from Wayne County. Nobody would know what that is. It has no brand. It has no image.
I'm trying to think what other – it's interesting. I think I will look at it a little deeper, like what other places maybe even have that. I
have not found one in the entire country where you say I'm going to that county and that's the place I'm going to. You say I'm going to the state, I'm going to the city, but you never say I'm going to – pick a county.
Do you do it in Northern California, like in the Bay Area with Marin County? Not really.
Not really.
The same.
A little, not the same. Sort of. Maybe that's sort of the closest example I could come up with.
Interesting. Well, I guess we'll take it up on the Check Out California radio show that starts on May 24th with Craig Sullivan. And so we hope you join us for the Rad Life 12 to 1 and 1 to 2 for Check Out California. We promise to keep it exciting.
Yeah, check it out.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome.
Oh, I did the welcome. Let's play the extra one here. Let's play the right music here. So you had us so teed up and I had played the wrong music. Here we go.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.